Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, three-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sports Radio 610 presents Seth Payne and Sean Pendergast.
We coming to H-Town. Let's get the work in, man. Let's go.
Great day. Great day. Oh, give me some juice, baby.
Oh, yeah.
That one's popped up on the infield. Tuck fires the bat away. It's frustration. An 0 for 5 night as Lofton makes the catch, and that'll do it for the Astros tonight. 11-2, the final score. It was a 7-run third inning that was the difference this evening as the Royals have now won 6 in a row, winning the first two games against Houston.
That was painful last night. 11-2, the final score. The Royals beat the Astros. Hey, everybody. Happy Thursday to you. Welcome in. I'm Sean Pendergast. He is Seth Payne. Seth, we've had two of these now this week where the Astros call up a minor leaguer. Spencer Arrighetti, I think, thought to be far more of a prospect than Blair Henley on Monday. That was more of a triage emergency thing. But for the second time this week, we've watched a youngster come up to the big leagues. And I'll give Arrighetti credit. He had two good innings. That looked encouraging for a while. But then that third inning felt a whole lot like Henley's first inning on Monday. And it's like, God, this poor kid just can't get anybody out. Seven runs.
Oh, my God, dude.
You know, like it's
it was. It was honestly, the first two innings were awesome. At least, thank God it wasn't like Blair Henley's start where he just couldn't even get an out. I've never been more excited for a rookie to get an out than for Arrighetti to get up there and get an out immediately. I'm like, oh, there we go.
Yeah.
His family's up there. One of his family members, the male, I was monitoring closely because he was the most vicious, like, and excited of the Arrighetti tribe that was cheering, but he was also eating something the entire time. And in good shape, too. Yeah. I got to talk to Spencer Arrighetti about this guy. This is what I'm telling myself, Sean. This is what I'm telling myself. Like, honestly, and I'm not this, like, this isn't something I'm trying to trump up within me or anything. The Astros, as many of you might remember, started off the season 0-4 to some team from up in the Northeast.
Yeah, yeah. Now that you mention it,
Since then, having started two rookies at pitcher, they've gone 4-5.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Like that, honestly, in baseball especially, if you're hovering around 500, well, it's basically the equivalent of playing with your backup quarterback, you know, except worse. Then I'm not gonna panic. Okay. I'm gonna try to focus on some of the positives, including an Arrighetti start. Arrighetti afterwards was very just open and honest about like, oh wow, yeah, this is life in the big leagues, man. You can't make one little mistake. But the big thing last night was that they weren't chasing his sweeper at all.
So
his sweeper, which is a really nice pitch, but like he realizes, okay, it's a little tougher to trick these dudes up here.
Yeah, Spillane was on. He was doing his weekly yesterday with John and Landry, and they talked about Arrighetti and Spillane. That was the first thing. Adam Spillane, as you guys know, he's our Astros guy. He covers the Astros beat for us here. He's baseball spo. That was one of the first things he said was he's got trouble with control, which is fine in the minor leagues because guys will chase that sweeper in the minor leagues.
Yeah.
But you get up to the big leagues, and even the mediocre hitters, for the most part, are disciplined enough to not chase that. And he learned it the hard way. I like your glass half full there view. Yeah. Okay, so we ignore the Yankees sweep because accidents happen. And then since then, they're 4-5, starting a kind of ratchet rotation, dealing with all these injuries here.
Okay. Yeah,
I can get with that. That and alcohol.
Yeah,
that and copious amounts of alcohol are going to get me through this thing, Seth. Thank you.
If you can be 500, well, you have an entire starting rotation on the IL. Then that's probably a pretty good sign for if and when you ever have any healthy pitchers again.
Yeah.
Because that's it. I mean, that's the big thing looming off there in the distance. There's no law against more Astros starters getting injured or sucking.
Right.
So there's that.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, here's the other thing, too. And look, the pitching is going to be obviously very much a work in progress here for the time being. The Astros might have some of the phoniest hitting stats early on this season that I've seen. You know, they're first in this, they're first in that, like some really important stats. Home runs, they're leading the league, and they've scored all these runs. Ooh, and OPS, and this and that. You don't get to spread that out evenly over 13 games. You don't choose to spread that out evenly. They are, and look, through the course of this dynasty that they've had, they've been this way, probably not as acutely as they are this season because they're 4-9, but a lot of these numbers have been piled up in bunches so far this year. This has not been a good offensive team so far this year in terms of being consistent, in terms of being timely. In the games where they've won, they've generally piled on for the most part. So that's troubling as well. Like the bats, you got a lot of highly paid guys in this lineup. And if they're not highly paid, they're looking to be highly paid.
Go earn it, man.
I mean, they need to mash through this through this stretch of starting pitching here.
Let me tell you one area as I continue to, as it's always been, I'm the positive one in the relationship.
Right.
Let me tell you one more thing that is for real, I think.
Yeah.
Second lowest strikeout rate in the majors. Like, that's for real. This is not like the 2015 Astros where they're hitting a boatload of home runs but also striking out as much as anybody else.
Okay.
Yeah, they are. So they're actually, like, they've got good plate discipline.
Yeah.
They still have the potential for a whole lot of power and explosivity.
Yep.
But they're not, like, all of a sudden a bunch of haggard losers up there at the plate.
I'm with you. I'm 100% with you, and I'm glad you pointed that out. They got to sack up, man. I got no other better way to put it than they just got to grow a set.
Yeah, runners in scoring position. Yeah, runners in scoring position is one of the ones that you always – like, yeah, people always want to. Even the stat nerds really don't have it in their heart when they say, like, well, that's just randomness and chance. No. They know. They know there's a clutch factor there somehow.
Yeah.
Their meager little computers can't quite figure out yet.
Of the 30 MLB clubs, if we can't sit here and talk about clutch factor with the Astros, then it doesn't exist, period. I mean, this is the most clutch team I've rooted for in my lifetime. That now is the time, man. Like, it's one thing to be clutch when you got a starting rotation with Justin Verlander or Garrett Cole or Framber Valdez or healthy Lance McCullers. I could go on and on and on. You've got your rotation right now is Christian Javier, Renell Blanco, Janky Hunter Brown, and JP France, and then whoever they're bringing up from Sugarland du jour. Like, that's your rotation right now.
And you, we were talking about this before, and you made a really good point. Just as last night Spencer Arrighetti got a kind of a wake-up call, is like, oh, wow, this is what it's like in the majors, and you just can't – you can't give them one little inch. We as fans are realizing, where is this cornucopia of prospects that we've become accustomed to?
That's
like, why – instead of wow, boy, finally this guy comes up, we're like, oh, boy, man, I don't know if this is the best thing for Arrighetti just yet. The guy's had – 10 double A or triple A starts in his career. This is where it's getting uncomfortable.
That's the scarier thing, big picture to me. Like, and that's my biggest takeaway. Like, driving in this morning as I'm sitting and I'm trying to process where we're at with this baseball team, is that the reinforcements are not on their way, and the reinforcements are not on their way either to directly take hold of this situation coming up from the minor leagues, nor are they there to go get you a solution to fix some of these things. Like, that's That's
we're
the biggest...
sitting on the beach in Dunkirk, Sean.
That's where we are.
Just hoping.
But you've got a team right now that's hesitant to sign some of your core guys long term, right? And I'm not. This is not shade at Jim Crane for not spending. He's spending money. But the problem is now some of the money they're spending is not smart money. Some of the money is sitting on the IL, and there's not reinforcements coming on their way. And missing those first and second round picks for a couple of years, even though there's no guarantee those guys would have become good players, they would have become something fungible and usable to extend this thing here. Like they are standing on a ledge right now, both within the 2024 season. And I know 162 games. I get it. I just recited who their starting rotation is, and that ain't changing anytime soon. They'll get Verlander back in the next couple weeks. We have no clue what Verlander is going to look like when he starts throwing to major leaguers again, or he starts pitching to major leaguers again. So they're standing on a ledge, not only here early in 2024, but I think the way things have gone down these first couple weeks of the season is the fact that there's no solution imminently to fix the worst first base situation in Major League Baseball.
Yes.
The fact that when the rotation, you know, you used to just the rotation, you'd get an injury and all of a sudden Christian Javier turns into a beast, you know, or Luis Garcia is there. All the guys they signed to those minimum contracts from Latin America, they're all there. Those guys, Ronel Blanco is the best that we've got right now in terms of that kind of story, and who knows how long that thing lasts. So that's my biggest fear, big picture. While there's no real baseball to enjoy right now in 2024, there ain't a safety net for this team right now.
No,
long term.
That's the potential terrifying part.
Yes.
So, I'm kind of enjoying being in this position. I do honestly. Like it feels like it's back to the basics. You know what it feels like, Sean?
Yeah.
It feels like Rocky IV.
Okay.
It's a little bit like Rocky IV. We're living in a duplex. You know, we've seen better days. We've been to the heights of all heights. But now we got to realize, like, oh, okay, this is, we got to really focus on the really elemental things.
That's five you're thinking of, where he has to go back
you're
to
right.
the old neighborhood.
Yes. Yeah.
I like to think it's Rocky IV. This is where I thought you were going.
No, you're exactly right.
No. This is where I thought you were going with Rocky IV. I thought we were like out in the Russian woods in a cabin getting ready to start working out and coming back from this 4-9 start.
That stupid hag Adrian was gone. We fought.
Oh,
yeah. We had like just a respite.
He was a hag.
Me, the ghost of Mickey, and who was training him at that point? Just hanging out in
that
the
was
woods.
Apollo's old manager, Duke. The bald-headed black guy. Yeah. I'll be him.
I wish there would have
you
been
You can
a
be
ghost
the ghost
appearance.
Of Mickey, and I'll be Duke.
It would have been cool if there was a ghost of Mickey appearance.
There was. Like, in Rocky V, there was a ghost of Mickey appearance.
Was it an appearance, or was it kind of like a vision that he had?
It was probably a vision, but Burgess Meredith was there to act it. That I know, yeah.
Oh, he didn't die in real life?
No.
I always assumed it was one of those things where like the actor died in real life during the filming and they had to pivot right into it. Yeah.
No. He was alive enough to make that. Remember, Rocky was on the ground outside the bar. Tommy Gunn had just knocked him to the ground in the street fight. And Mickey said, "Get up, you son of a bee." That's right.
Because
Mickey loves you.
That was more of a vision.
Yeah.
I think that I still doubt that it was the actual character. I think that was something they took. That was some old footage they had took
you
from
think?
One of the previous movies or
I don't
something.
No,
yeah.
I'm going to check when he died. All right, this.
I think that he might still be alive. Who knows? My one big complaint also about the Royals, Seth Lugo. Listen. Seth used to be a relatively unique name. Okay. It used to be Jews and me. Those were the people named Seth.
Right.
And now all of a sudden, now we got all these non-Jewish Seths out there other than me. And I'm disgusted with
you
it.
You popularized it.
Apparently
when you were a player, it's like all these Shaqs that are showing up now, you know? Like
the weird thing is, I think Seth Rogen popularized
maybe
it.
Maybe so.
Seth Rogen came up in like the late 1990s, and I think there were a lot of people that were like, there's Seth. Okay, I like that. Maybe my kid won't be a dopey stoner, but still,
I choose to believe that it's you. Everybody wanted a Seth Payne. I'm going to name my kid Seth. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you on a Thursday. Astros lose last night. We've got some Shohei Ohtani news that we're going to get to. We will get to that. And also, question from a texter yesterday. It's a good question. I saved it for today. He's nervous, 8130 if you're listening. Nervous the Texans could be the 2024 version of the Jags. Flavor of the month, media darling. Why are they not going to be the Jags of last year, the Texans? We'll dive into that coming up next.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
What up, y'all? It's your boy, Danny Green, three-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host, Harrison Sanford, on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Get to the Texans here in just a minute, but one of the big stories trending nationwide today is we have an update on the Shohei Ohtani situation with the gambling interpreter, the gambling fiend that is Ipe Mizuhara. And apparently, it would appear, unless there's a whole lot of lying to the feds going on right now, that the story of Ipe Mizuhara stealing money from Shohei Ohtani and Ohtani not knowing the money was being stolen from him is true. That's according to a New York Times story. Ipe Mizuhara is currently negotiating with federal investigators on his admission that is exactly what happened.
He's in negotiations to plead guilty to federal crimes in connection with the purported theft, according to three people briefed on the matter. Basically, the allegations revolve around him somehow altering the banking settings in their brokerage account, whatever, for him to be able to have access to everything.
Quick, and for Shohei to not get notifications about all this stuff.
Right, yeah. You know, I 100%, I was kind of surprised by how many people thought it was implausible that Shohei Ohtani, who's long had a reputation as basically just being a baseball monk, you know, living very cheap, not caring about money.
And
doing so, probably doesn't keep super, super tight watch on his finances and just assumes that the people he trusts are taking care of it. Yeah. I think that Mizuhara is a guy that he trusted.
Yep.
And Mizuhara violated his trust. And it's not like this is not that rare an occurrence. I think I saw so many people say like, oh yeah, like somebody would have that much money stolen from them. Yeah, it happens all the time. But the biggest thing that I've learned from this, Sean, it's a trend I've noticed, and I blame binge watching various dramas on Netflix and what have you. Mm-hmm. People expect the entire legal process on any situation to be played out in the course of 8 hours as you sit on your couch.
Yeah.
I've seen so many people like say, how come Mizuhara is not in jail right this moment?
Yeah.
Like, well, because that's not how the process works.
Dude,
you know?
It's so funny you say that. So when Amy and I were up in New York, a driver that we had to go down to Philadelphia was a former cop, a former Philly cop for like 27 years. And he had been an extra on multiple episodes of Law and Order.
Oh yeah.
And he said that was one of the things that they needed to tell, people like in the real world when they were interviewing them to be on juries or whenever there was any sort of court thing playing out.
Yeah.
There was almost one of the checklist items was to remind them that this is not like TV. This is going to take a long time.
Yeah, you know what they always say also, people in the actual legal profession? Jurors come in expecting there to be DNA evidence for everything. It's like a shoplifting case. Like, well, where's the DNA? If he's guilty, then how come he didn't leave it? Well, we've got video evidence right here. I mean, dude, that's him.
Exhibit A, a blood sample on this cake carton of Tide.
Yeah.
That's funny.
So, there's not just DNA everywhere and anywhere that you can just grab up. So, you see it all the time. Not to get off on too much of a tangent.
Yeah.
I noticed this, man. When somebody, does something that's almost definitely illegal, And, like, immediately, like, half the responses, like, this will be live streamed or something somewhere. And they're like, well, if this was such and such, or if this was the political party which I'm not affiliated with, that person would be in prison already. Right. Like, whoa, wait, it's happening right now.
Now, now that said, this is moving along a lot faster than people anticipated, because I think people anticipated the story that was put forth eventually of what's happened, you know, of what happened, to not be true. I think there's a lot of people that were skeptical that there were lies going on in all this. And the fact that Mizuhara is just stepping up, working with the feds, being very cooperative, which is the smart thing to do, by the way, is having this whole thing play out to where anybody who is hoping for Ohtani to be somehow embroiled or entangled in all this and that he was gambling, it looks like right now the possession arrow is pointed heavily towards that not being the case. Like, this thing may wind up being a fairly boring story in the end compared to what it could have been.
The biggest question we all had was, okay, well, if this is indeed true, the current version of the story, if this is true that Mizuhara stole from Ohtani, then Mizuhara's got to end up in, like, charged with something. He stole $4.5 million.
And he will.
So far, right now, that looks true. Now, look, there's no end to the potential conspiracy theories. Okay, is Ohtani paying off Mizuhara to be able to take the fall, all of that? Honestly, for me, just looking at it from the outside in, like, all of the reports from people who have known Ohtani that have basically said he's never shown any interest in gambling at all, it feels like this is the most obvious explanation, that Mizuhara. And remember, the only reason that there was an original version of the story was the guy who is now the alleged criminal would have been lying to everybody.
Yeah.
You know, it's really not outside the realm of possibility that the dude who stole $4.5 million from his friend was also lying to everybody to try to not get into trouble.
Quick text on this, then we'll shift over to the Texans here. It would be awesome to find out Major League Baseball paid the interpreter to plead guilty.
Yeah.
That would
be
next level. The payoff to Mizuhara to take the fall was like actually a level above Ohtani. Like a season of 24 where you watch it and like 11 episodes in, you're like, well, that's the kingpin right there. And then come to find out, no, that guy's like two levels below the actual kingpin.
And honestly, this is where I stand on this, because I think there are a lot of Astros fans who understandably just want the Dodgers to get some kind of a comeuppance for the way they've treated the Astros.
Very much so, yes.
In my mind, that's no different than the people who are going to, you know, boo Yordan Alvarez for the cheating scandal or something. You know, like, Yordan wasn't on the major league squad or anything, but that's where I am with that. Booing or like hoping for bad stuff for Ohtani as he just recently became a Dodger, I can't go there.
I was hoping he was gambling like crazy. I'm not going to lie. Like, that would have made the story super interesting if the biggest star in baseball was betting on soccer and golf. It would have been, you know, baseball would have been the big thing, but he's betting on all these sports and he's wiring $500,000 to some underground thug bookie in New York, or in LA, I should say. That would have been fun. This is a little, you know, it's a little tamer. So, question from the text page yesterday, 8130. I'm nervous the Texans could be the 2024 version of the Jags. Flavor of the month, media darling. Why are they not going to be the 2023 Jags? And I guess we should reset for those who don't remember. The Jaguars were one of the hottest teams in football at the end of 2023. They won a bunch of games to get to 9-8, win the division, make the playoffs, then won a playoff game by coming back from 27-0 down against the Chargers, and then went to the divisional round and put up a hell of a fight against the Chiefs, who went on to win the Super Bowl. So, yeah, the Jags came into 2023, Seth, with a lot of the same buzz that the Texans are coming into 2024 with right now.
Right. Yeah, the momentum and unlimited growth for the young quarterback and everything else.
They were getting Calvin Ridley back from his suspension.
Yeah, Ridley was one of the ones. The Calvin Ridley part was, I kind of forgot about Calvin Ridley, and then I remembered, and then he looked really good in training camp at times. But I think that was still probably one that in hindsight was the one where people were, to steal the old metaphor that our friend Stefan Diggs likes to use, they're putting the cart before the horse.
Carriage,
a little bit there.
Yeah.
You can say cart. I like cart before the horse more
so
than carriage.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Carriage sounds a little too fancy. Like rich folk back in the day.
I'm with you.
So I think that one of the biggest things, aside from how you feel about Trevor Lawrence versus C.J. Stroud long-term or anything. Yeah. Was it this year, one of the excuses that people make on behalf of the Jaguars is that Trevor Lawrence was banged up the entire year.
Okay.
That he was dealing with like three or four different injuries and that maybe he'll be a lot different when he's healthy this year.
Valid? Is that a valid excuse for the Jags? Is that
Not really, because C.J. Stroud was injured all year too. He just didn't have to talk about it all the time.
That's right.
It wasn't, you know, he wasn't, his play wasn't such that you had to create excuses for him.
Yeah.
Every quarterback in the NFL is injured. You know, if you're in the game and you're an NFL quarterback, you're playing well. Okay, if you're a good NFL quarterback. Unless it's your index finger on your throwing hand or something like that, figure out a way to get it done.
Yeah.
So no, I don't buy it. I don't need, not for these nagging injuries.
Yep.
These like non-serious injuries that barely even put you on the injury report. That's not an excuse for a quarterback to play poorly.
The biggest difference for me is, and look, I think C.J. Stroud is a better quarterback than Trevor Lawrence. I think there's a good chance DeMeco Ryans is a better coach than Doug Peterson. I don't know that we know that for sure yet. And Doug Peterson won a Super Bowl, so I want to respect that. To me, the biggest difference between the two is that when the Jags had their big offseason where they're like, wow, everybody's signing with the Jags. This is crazy. They're making all sorts of moves on both sides of the ball. They made signings on defense. They signed a bunch of weapons for Trevor Lawrence. They had to make those moves just to get to where they got to in 2022. Yeah. The Texans are making their big swing of an offseason coming off of a 10-7 season, not a season where you had the number one pick in the draft and you took Trayvon Walker with it. You know,
right, like, right.
The Texans are elevating now to get to that next level. So I for sure don't feel like they're going to fall out of the playoffs this year like the Jags did.
Oh, I don't know, though. Falling out of the playoffs, it's almost like they could play at the same level as they did last year and not make the playoffs this year because of the schedule.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I don't know. I'm trying not to get too – I do feel like it's putting a cart before the horse a little bit to just put them in as chalk to make the playoffs.
No, for sure. I understand that. No, trust me, as a gambler, I know nothing's guaranteed. I just think I think they're a better – the schedule is harder. They're a better football team.
Yeah.
You know, they're better equipped to deal with it.
The other big part about the quarterback dynamic is that – Doug Peterson has a history of getting a whole lot out of an athletic young quarterback and then the guy not really developing. I'm not blaming Doug Peterson for the saga of Carson Wentz, but I think he was able to extract a lot out of Carson Wentz, and a lot of that is doing some college-type stuff, via RPOs and quick decision-type stuff. That it's kind of like, Sean, it's kind of like a young pitcher going in against a team like the Royals, for instance, just hypothetically, that the first time around, nobody's used to your stuff. Once they get used to your stuff, that's where it's hard for that young pitcher to really do anything. And yes, last year, I think Trevor Lawrence kind of, it was his second time through the rotation, and teams took advantage of it. You know, multiple defenses after games against the Jaguars would say, well, Trevor Lawrence is a first read quarterback, get him off his first read, and he's kind of lost. They made excuses for that, too, including the receiving core not being on the same page as him. All right, well, that's up to your veteran QB to get the receivers on the same page. That's another one of those things that Tom Brady was so good at that people can't give credit to because it's not a highlight reel.
Yeah.
But like Tom Brady was the best receivers coach in the NFL.
Yes.
Just flat out, you know? And I think CJ Stroud spends a lot of time with his receivers and understands the importance, you know, having talked to Tom Brady a good chunk last offseason, of getting those guys on that kind of ESP level of communication.
Yeah. Did you see the picture that was floating around on Twitter of CJ and Stephon Diggs when they were working out at UCLA this past week? And CJ's got the iPad out and he's pointing something out to Stephon. CJ brought an iPad with him for like just tossing around workouts out at UCLA.
And it wasn't just because they were out of the state of Texas and Pornhub was finally available.
Right, I don't
think
so.
It was like they were actually
probably
talking. Not
in that moment, at least.
It was probably football stuff that they were looking at.
I would like to think so, yeah.
You got to have NetJet money these days to watch Pornhub if you're a Texan.
That's right.
I shouldn't be talking about this right this moment. I apologize, everybody. I'm sorry.
That's all right.
Sorry.
You're good. Burgess Meredith, by the way, Seth, died in 1997. Rocky V came out in 1990. So that was a paid cameo. Yeah, he was fine. Yeah.
How old was he when he died?
That I don't have on here.
I feel like Burgess Meredith is one of those guys that looked decrepit and old when he was 32.
Yes. They had
one of
when
those
he was playing the Penguin
cases.
On Batman, he was like 31 years old or something. Yeah.
He was the Penguin
was
on
the,
Batman?
On the TV show Batman. Yeah, yeah, yeah. He was the Penguin.
Burgess Meredith?
Burgess Meredith,
what a,
yeah.
What a name. Why doesn't that name come
it's
back?
A great name, man. It's a great name.
He's got two women's names is his names, and yet still was like one of the toughest, grisliest fake trainers in movie history.
Fake trainer.
And dude, he definitely looked like an old man when he was a young man.
They all did. Yep, they all did. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. Good to be with you on a Thursday. Let's get to some headlines. We'll do it. We need to. We'll circle back to the Astros. What's our concern level right now? Speaking of the Jags, big signing yesterday in the NFL, and hockey coming to Houston has taken a big blow of late. We'll get to all that in headlines. That is coming up next.
Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines.
Yeah, let's get to headlines. Astros lose last night, 11-2, the final score. For the second time in 3 days, the Astros call up a minor league pitcher. For the second time in 3 days, that minor league pitcher gets shellacked by the opposition. It was Blair Henley on Monday. That was more of an emergency thing. I think more people had heard of Spencer Arrighetti before last night than had heard of Blair Henley before Monday. Spencer Arrighetti. He actually got through two innings before he got shelled. Seven-run third did him in last night. So.
He looked fine. I mean, you could tell from the get-go that the control wasn't magnificent. He had like his sweeper, which we'd heard about, looked good, except that and it generated some whiffs. It's just these major league hitters were not chasing his sweeper out of the zone. And it by the time the rotation came around the second time, they'd seen enough of him and they kind of went to work. So it was much more fun to watch for the first two innings than it certainly was for the first one third of an inning that Henley was out there. I didn't have to suffer with Arrighetti's parents for those first two innings.
Right.
I did feel bad. I felt bad for Arrighetti's dad because he, as he said to Julia, he likes to watch from, did he say the left field? He likes to watch from left field, and he's very superstitious about it. But meanwhile, there he was in the middle of his son's second appearance in the major, or second inning of the major leagues, doing an interview like in a non-customary spot for him in the stadium.
Hey, man, your son has not gotten that kind of stroke yet to where he can just place you wherever you want in the ballpark.
Yeah, but I feel bad for Mr. Arrighetti.
No, I know.
He's probably blaming himself right
kicking
now
himself
for that
morning.
Third inning. You know,
yeah.
Like it was that was the bad juju.
That's it.
Don't worry, Mr. Arrighetti. It was just, this is normal. This is normal. Just rookie, it had a smooth stretch and then some bumps in the road and your son will rebound just fine. You had nothing to do with it. Your placement in the stadium had nothing to do with it. I exonerate you.
This is two straight games now since the Fromber news and since they exploded on Monday. You know, I think on Monday we're like, okay, now that's the offense we've been waiting for. Bunch of home runs, resilient, you fell behind, you came back. And now since then, they've looked like the same offense that got swept by the Yankees, where you're going, okay, well, I mean, they're getting some hits. They're getting making contact, but they are not stepping up in the moments they need to. Now, last night, you gave up 11 runs. So, like, it's, you would have needed, obviously, a huge offensive output. But I think the two runs last night and then just the massive amount of runners left on base the night before accentuate the fact that, this to me is like this is the biggest reason why they're 4-9 to me is that their offensive stats on the aggregate look phenomenal, but they are so inconsistent. Like they score in bunches, and that's how you get to 4-9.
I guess I'm a little bit torn on that because look, if you're a really good power hitting team, you're gonna score in bunches. That's just the way it goes. But you also, like, if that's the situation, then you got to have really good pitching to sustain you through the dry spells. We've seen that with the Astros through the years.
Yeah.
And right this very moment where they've got an entire starting rotation on the IL, they don't have the pitching to sustain that. So,
I would say,
like, if you look at, if you're going to look at the expected stats to try to figure out, okay, what's the real performance of these guys, the guys that are hitting the ball the hardest and like have the highest expected batting averages, Kyle Tucker, Jeremy Peña, Yordan Alvarez.
Yeah.
Like those are that matches the eyeball test ever since Yordan got going. Peña, man, it's fun to watch Peña on the base paths, compared to say Correa. Just, he's all about hustle. Chaz should have been out on a double play yesterday, but Pena not only broke up the double play, but basically forced a wild throw to second. So Chaz got a hit. Well, I don't know if they scored it as a hit or not, but Chaz got on base. And Pena went from first to third. It was awesome.
Making stuff happen for sure. Afternoon game today, Seth. 1 o'clock start today for the Astros.
Damn it. Well, I got to catch up on Survivor. When am I going to do that?
That's okay. You got all day long, buddy. You got all day long.
Sean, I've got activities planned.
Seth, if it's like yesterday, you can start getting caught up on it in the fourth inning.
Sean.
Yeah.
What did I tell you at 6:01 a.m.? Since they lost the first four games of the season to some team in the Northeast, they are 4-5 while starting two rookies in that stretch of nine games.
Yep.
They've been .500 while starting two rookie pitchers.
You're right. You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right.
Neither of whom were actually ready to come up. So there you go.
Fair enough. Josh Allen, not the quarterback, the defensive end. 5 years, $150 million from the Jacksonville Jaguars. The franchise tag gets ripped up. He has a new deal, $30 million a year, $88 million guaranteed. He had 17.5 sacks last year in a contract year. As a Texans fan, Seth, how are we feeling about 5 years, $150 million for Josh Allen?
I'm okay. I'm not overly distraught about it. I figured that's what was going to happen.
Yeah.
If there's anything that you should feel good about, it's that Tytus Howard and Laremy Tunsil are capable offensive tackles, and that's not the biggest concern right now for the Texans within the division. Josh Allen is a pain in the ass to deal with, but it's not like he's going to destroy your world every single time you see him.
These long-term contracts are 50-50. You could feel any... You'd be just as... If you're a Texan fan who's like, oh, crap, we got to deal with Josh Allen for five more years, you're just as justified going, man, the Jags might have overextended themselves on a guy. You never know how these things end up working out. He gets $88 million guaranteed. Will Anderson continues to lick his chops. Actually, Will Anderson probably isn't licking his chops. Will Anderson's probably in a basement somewhere working out, getting ready for week one of 2024 and focusing on that. I am licking my chops on behalf of Will Anderson and what he's going to make down the road with these.
Yeah, he'll be Will Anderson's not a guy that you worry about being spoiled by the money.
At all, no.
I think both with CJ Stroud and Will Anderson, there's no part of me that thinks like, oh, crap.
Right.
He got that big contract and now he's just going to phone it in.
He's going to make a lot of money, man.
What I worry about with Will Anderson more than anything is that he's going to give too much of it away.
Yeah.
Who's the co-founder of Apple there?
I don't remember.
Jobs' old running mate.
Forget.
I know that was Steve, right?
Ben
Wozniak.
Wozniak. Ben had that I know the answer gleam in his eye just now. He put his headphones on. Wozniak.
So Steve Wozniak, that was the big concern people had for him back in the day. He was too nice. You know, he was going to give it all away. I worry about that with Will Anderson.
Yeah.
He's going to give it all to Otani's interpreter.
I was just going to say there's an Otani angle to this. So Josh Allen signs with the Jags. Hey, real quick, the chances, if you're a hockey fan here in Houston, it's not been a great week. There's a group in Utah, in Salt Lake City, that is getting ready to court the Arizona Coyotes, and they've made significant progress on the framework of an agreement to relocate the team to Salt Lake City, Utah. And unlike Houston, where I think Houston has there are passionate hockey fans in Houston, Salt Lake City as a city has been trying and organizing for years to get the NHL there. And whereas I think Houston, it's been more of a kind of a niche effort here. And I know Tillman Fertitta, he was on CNBC yesterday saying he's working on the NHL, but it has not been nearly the organized effort here that it's been in Salt Lake City.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
They've got a committee formed.
They're probably like how we were when we lost football. And I know Salt Lake City has not been in the NHL before, but they've been way more organized about it.
It's where people didn't anticipate. They thought a lot of times when they think of the imminent global holy war, they think along more conventional terms when this is actually the beginning of the Mormons versus the Saudis.
Yes.
This will end up being the Saudis start. It'll start in the NHL. People were worried about the NFL or what have you, but it's the Mormons versus the Saudis.
Right.
And it begins with the Coyotes.
It does. And ironically, when they eventually go to battle, they're actually going to dress up as hockey players, drop their gloves, and then just fist fight the whole
that's
time.
A, yeah, that'd be that. That's going to be the pleasant surprise.
That's the men's like, way to settle it, you know.
Yes, they'll realize, like, hey, why bother with all the mayhem and death and everything? Let's just settle this. Let's settle this the old-fashioned way with fisticuffs.
Text message, another reason Houston is so uptight, no hockey. That goes back to a story Seth and I had a couple days ago about Houston being, I think unfairly named the most uptight city in the United States.
I do think for hockey to really thrive in Houston, they'd have to take a little bit of the approach that some of the MLS teams have done really well with, is that when the NFL team or the NBA team, but especially it works with the NFL because just the email lists are so big. Like, say the Texans were to take an active ownership interest in it, then all of a sudden you get that cross-branding, and it's been really good for because the Atlanta teams signed it up with the Falcons.
Kansas City, the Hunts are a big ownership in the soccer team there, and they're very popular. You know, that's a good example. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. Those are your headlines. Astros lose last night 11-2 to the Royals, and they are back at it. Today, day game against the Kansas City Royals in Kansas City. And then it's back home to the cozy confines of Minute Maid Park against the Rangers. All right, we head into the 7 o'clock hour here. Payne and Pendergast, Sports Radio 610. The NFL announced their Brazil game yesterday. It's going to be Packers and Eagles. We're going to slowly start to see calculated leaks from the NFL on the schedule here between now and probably the first week of May. The big games. Which games, if any, do we expect the Texans to be in of these leaked games that could come out? The leaked games that could come out over the next few weeks. We'll speculate. Coming up next.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, 3-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.